Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather around the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show, lots of good people involved. And the host and founder of the program is a marvelous woman named Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the ongoing battle against ageism. On today's program, she'll be talking with Deborah Halber, a journalist and the author of a new book titled The Skeleton Crew, How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases, and that's published by Simon & Schuster. That's coming up later in the program. Let's jump right in now with Carol talking to Zelda LaGrange. She was a close confidant and member of Nelson Mandela's inner circle, and she's written Good Morning, Mr. Mandela, a memoir offering an intimate portrait of Nelson Mandela and his remarkable life, published by Viking.
Now, as you've written, Zelda, in 1994, you got your job at the age of 24 as a low-level typist in the office of the newly elected president of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, by chance. But do you think anything happens by chance?
No, actually today I can say I don't think so. It must have been fate, absolutely.
Now, why do you say, Zelda, that your first meeting with Nelson Mandela was a real turning point in your life?
Well, you know what, it's the day that he really started changing my thinking. So that's also why I chose the title of the book. And that was the day when I met him first. So I started thinking and questioning my own beliefs the day I met him.
And was he unusually kind and open when you first met him? I mean,
absolutely. He did exactly the opposite of what I expected of him. He was kind. He was sincere. He was friendly. He was inquisitive about my well-being. And that's not something you expect from your enemy. And I was brought up to believe that this man is my people's enemy. Yet he did exactly the opposite.
Now, during the almost 20 years that you worked for him, you became his trusted personal work assistant as well, and this is such a moving part, that you became good friends, and you called him by his clan name, Madiba, which I think is so appropriate because it means reconciler. And why did you use his clan name often when you talked to him?
Well, you know what, he is single-handedly probably mostly responsible for reconciling and unifying South Africa. And using his clan name has become a very common way of referring to him now. You know, people from the political, from both sides of the political divide started calling him Madiba after 1995, after he reconciled South Africa. So it is a common term that people use to refer to him. But later in years, I called him a grandfather, or his Xhosa name for grandfather. So that's really how close we became and how fond I was of him.
And you, as his work assistant, did so many things for him, joining him on his visits to leaders around the world, organizing his every move and shielding him from the never-ending stream of people who wanted to just be with him, even if it was for a moment. So which of your many duties is most stressful, and how long could your workday be?
Well, you know what, we work sometimes, especially when we traveled, I would be the person to wake him up in the morning at, say, 5 o'clock, and I would be the person to switch off the light at night, so that would be anything from 10, 11, 12 o'clock. So it was all hours. The most difficult part of the job was really dealing with the pressure of from the outside world, because I served as a buffer. You know, I had to absorb the pressure between the outside world and him. And I must be honest with you, that was really the hardest part of the job over all the years, is just that constant and relentless pressure.
Oh, you know, just hearing you mention that you had to deal with the outside world and how it affected your inner world and what you were trying to do, I mean, just hearing about it makes... I understand how stressful it was.
Yes, yes. No, yeah, no. It was very stressful. You know, people forget that about any job. You know, that and Mr. Mandela was already an elderly person, so he couldn't deal with the amount of pressure of the same as a youngster, a young head of state. So we had to be very careful in managing his life to allow him the time and the space to recharge almost.
Oh, absolutely. Nelson Mandela was well known as a strong peace negotiator, and was that partly because he had great listening and communication skills? And what about that wonderful smile?
Oh, absolutely. It connected people. It made people feel special. Whenever he smiled at them, and there was sincerity in his smile as well. So people just adored him for that infectious smile of his.
Now, on a lighter note, you have a delightful story in your memoir about Nelson Mandela's personal relationship with Queen Elizabeth, and you wrote that he called her Elizabeth, and I bet there weren't too many people that did that, and I smiled so when I read that Nelson Mandela was probably the first and last person to greet her with a cheery, "Oh, Elizabeth, you've lost weight." I mean, that was quite a story.
That's right. Not everyone in the world gets to tell the Queen of England that she's lost weight. So that was very, very funny and entertaining to watch. And she gracefully accepted. It was also his way of teasing and charming her. And, you know, she gracefully accepted it, and it was beautiful to watch. They really shared a very warm friendship.
Now, what American president did Mandela have the best relationship, and what one did he have some real differences with? Because I found that interesting.
Yes, well, definitely because they served at the same time, President Clinton and Mr. Mandela. We are still very close to the Clintons, even beyond Mr. Mandela's passing. We maintained good relationship with the Clintons. And then President George W. Bush, he was obviously much younger at the time when he took office. Mr. Mandela was already retired. And in the fateful events of Iraq, Mr. Mandela, as you know, went public and criticized the United States over Iraq. And that created some tension between Mr. Mandela and President George W. Bush. But even after that incident, Mr. Mandela remained respectful. He reached out to President Bush on a few occasions. So it was never, it was never the end of the friendship. But it's one of the great things of Nelson Mandela is he could differ from someone. He could have a different opinion, but it was always in a respectful manner.
And he could sit down at the same table with people he disagreed with and talk about it and try to come to some sort of compromise, and that was a wonderful thing.
Absolutely.
Now, talking about the end of this great man's life, you knew that he was in poor health, but it's always devastating when someone you love dies, but it must have been very comforting for you to realize that here was a black man who took up arms against a racist state, actually defeated it, he ran the country, and then he was able to die peacefully in his own bed at 95. And I think this was all beyond extraordinary.
Absolutely. I fully, fully agree with you, Carol. It brings solace, it brings comfort to know that, you know, you've walked alongside such a great man, but the most important thing is that I know for a fact that he was content and he was happy with his life, despite the things that we may find or experience as an unpleasant things in his life. He was completely content with his life. He achieved well. He was happy with what he achieved. So he really went. He went in a peaceful way.
You know, and that was a blessing. Now you're 43, and I'm thinking about your memoir. What do you hope your readers will take away from it? I took away so many good things.
I'm happy to hear that. Thanks, Carol. You know what I want? I wanted, first of all, to share the person that I knew with the rest of the world. I've been so privileged, and it is not mine to keep, so I really wanted to share that person. Secondly, there's so many lessons of respect. I wanted to remind people why we revered this man, why he was such a great humanitarian. Those are easy lessons for us to take, and the world is grappling with so many issues around peace. If you look at the Middle East and the Ukraine, yet, you know, the examples of great men that walked this earth, that has brought resolve to issues of that nature, they've been here. We just need to learn from them. So I hope to share those things, and I hope to change people's thinking they read my book.
As he did, yes, and you know, and that's one of the things that people will get from the book, is a positive way about thinking and getting things done, And I also want to commend you, Zelda, for pledging to donate a portion of your book's royalties to the Nelson Mandela Foundation. So what does the foundation fund? What does it do?
Well, we are what you may know as the Presidential Library. That's where we keep all the memorabilia, Mr. Mandela's writings, his letters, his artifacts. So it's a presidential library, but in South Africa we don't get support from the government to preserve these documents and the library as you do in the United States. So we created a non-governmental organization, and we try to disseminate information about Nelson Mandela from the Center of Memory. So that's really what they do.
That's Zelda LaGrange in conversation with Carol Marks. The book is Good Morning, Mr. Mandela, a memoir published by Viking. A Touch of Grey continues in a moment.
It's Practical Polly Radio. I've switched to cooking with healthier oils. So now what do I do with all these tubs of lard? Skinny jeans feeling too tight? A bit of lard on your hips and thighs and those pants fly on like a dream. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. I'm the anchor, and here's the star of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Deborah Halber. Deborah Halber is a journalist and the author of a new book titled The Skeleton Crew, How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases. It's published by Simon & Schuster.
How did you get interested in studying a community of novice detectives tackling real-life cold cases that are as convoluted, I think, as any in any James Patterson novel?
Well, it was a bit of an accident. In 2010, I came across a photo in the Boston Globe of a woman with this long reddish hair and beautiful eyes and this kind of enigmatic Mona Lisa smile. And then I realized this wasn't a living person, but a digital reconstruction of what this woman had looked like before she had been brutally murdered in 1974. And apparently this woman was called Lady of the Dunes because she had never been identified. And I just couldn't imagine how that was possible.
And I guess that she still has not been found, but haven't they been able to learn a lot about who she might be?
Well, no, it's true that that case is still unsolved. And the police, the law enforcement has been pretty close-mouthed about what they do know about her. One thing they did know in 1974, part of how they found her was, very sadly, with her hands cut off, so fingerprints were not an option. But they did know that she had $10,000 worth of dental work, which in 1974 was, you know, an enormous amount, still a large amount today. And yet, even though by reaching out to dentists and publishing her dental records, no dentist has ever come forward who recognizes that work as their own.
There are how many unidentified bodies do you think in a year does the Department of Justice kind of guess that they might be?
Well, yeah, the Bureau of Justice Statistics set out actually about 10 years ago at this point to try to quantify this problem. And they came up with the absolutely astronomical figure of 40,000. So they think there are 40,000 unidentified human remains scattered around the country. And I've heard since from medical examiners and from others that they feel that that number is probably low.
Oftentimes, these unidentified bodies belong to loved ones who are actively looking for them. And, you know, I was wondering if you could briefly tell us about this phenomenon, because I think it's amazing that's occurred between the Internet and civilians who are using it to compile details about these unidentified bodies and try to find out who they are.
So it wasn't really until the advent of the Internet that it was possible for people to start to create databases. And it wasn't, sort of oddly enough, it wasn't necessarily the loved ones of these missing people, missing and unidentified, who tried to do this, but it was just kind of random strangers who happened upon this problem, and sort of like me, maybe had gotten sucked into one particular case and gotten more and more into it until they realized that they'd like to do something. So they started posting information, much of it culled from just sort of traditional sources, newspaper stories, library archives, death notices, anything that they could find, and putting it into repositories online. And that sort of allowed other people to come at the problem as well and search those details and try to compare them to details of missing persons that were also posted online.
Now, if you had to say, what do you think is the motivation for these amateur web sleuths who, you know, for them it's really a hobby sharing this information online because they're not paid. Often they don't meet the other people that they are communicating with online. So what do you think they're doing it? Because actually they're performing, you know, a very difficult task.
Yeah, exactly, and that's something I delve into in the book. I believe that many of them come across the phenomenon kind of accidentally, like I did. But I think as time goes on, they become aware that this is an issue for families. There are families out there who are looking for these people, and because of the nature of the system or slip through the cracks or whatever reason, they have not been found. So I think it becomes for them, it may start out as a mystery, a challenge, a puzzle. And many of these people are underemployed. Their day jobs may not be very intellectually stimulating. And this is something they come home to and literally spend hours on every night, every week. But then, and they stick with it because they realize it's a matter of closure for a family, and they'd like to provide that closure.
Now, you have some fantastically interesting stories in your book, and there's one about Bobby Lingos, I believe, who is a civilian dispatcher and with the police department, and he helped solve a case of an unidentified body that was found in a river in 2000, and he used a technique called offlining to find out the name of a person who is wearing a particular kind of shirt. So what is offlining technique, and hasn't it even been used in the aftermath of 9/11?
So most of the details, most of the data is stored in a website. This is a long-time existing website, an offshoot of the FBI called the National Crime Information Center, NCIC. And only law enforcement has access to this database. But because Bobby happened to work as a dispatcher, he worked within a police department, although he is not a member of law enforcement per se, he did have the ability, his boss gave him the permission to interact with NCIC in Virginia, where it's based. And so offlining would be, he would say, I've got a body here, it has certain characteristics, let's say a unique tattoo. And so they would be able to put those parameters into the system, the tattoo, the gender, the relative approximate age, the approximate height. And that enabled them, enabled Bobby, who really took this initiative, to make some IDs. Yes, that technique was actually used with the Oklahoma City bombing. There were parts of Timothy McVeigh's truck that had been scattered by the bomb, but they were using that technique. They were able to identify the rented vehicle that he used.
Now, what do you think about all those TV shows that we see all the time, like CSI or Cold Case and Bones, and they make it look as if it's so easy to get crime-solving clues from victims' remains and their skeleton? Do you think that they're really doing any help or giving the just praise that should be due for the way it's really done?
Well, I love those shows myself, and they have had the advantage of getting a lot of people interested in forensic science and interested in these kinds of cases, because each of these shows, like the cases in my book, all start with a body being found, and then the identity of that body, in my case, is what becomes the mystery. But yes, in those shows, it all looks very straightforward and easy, and there's a kind of a high-tech screen where, you know, IDs and numbers and all sorts of photos pop up. But in real life, it's much more, it's just a slogging, slow process, very imprecise, an age range, a date of death range. These numbers are just, you know, wild estimates sometimes. Sometimes it ages could be off by 10 years. Time of death could be off by even months if they don't have much to go on. So it's really in real life, it really does take these people and this kind of dedication and patience, because it really is like a needle in a haystack search.
And by publicizing the good work you're doing, you really have done, you know, a good service. And I understand there are some organizations that people who might be interested in becoming sleuth web surfers themselves might be able to look up on the Internet and find out more about.
There is a relatively recent phenomenon, an initiative of the National Institute of Justice called NAMIS, the National Missing and Unidentified Persons System. And the beauty of this database is that it's accessible to the public, as well as medical examiners, coroners, and law enforcement. So it's a good starting point if somebody wants to log into this. It's a pretty simple process, and you can immediately start searching. You could just even go to your own state, and I suspect most people would be shocked at the unidentified people and how old the cases are from their own regions.
That's Deborah Halber in conversation with Carol Marks. Her book is titled The Skeleton Crew: How Amateur Sleuths Are Solving America's Coldest Cases, published by Simon & Schuster. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Kevin Casey, the editor of Talkers Magazine. That's next when A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security webpages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving, according to the U.S. Department of Energy. Speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this time each week by the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in talk radio, Kevin Casey, who's also one of our senior correspondents here on A Touch of Gray. Kevin, this has been a tragic week in terms of the loss of Robin Williams, which just kind of shot across the country as a lightning bolt of despair. I mean, it's just it really blindsided everybody. And I know, you know, and I'm sure our listeners realize listening to the radio, that this is one of, if not the biggest topics of the week.
Absolutely. There's no question about it. And I think, you know, the shocking, you know, nature of it, that a man at 63 years old, been an apparent suicide, that a man beloved for his contributions to American culture and entertainment, just very shocking.
A funny man, not only a great actor with nuance and pathos and drama, but a funny man, a man who has great comedic skills, genius, his ability to be funny spontaneously is among the best of all time.
which goes to show you, you know, the tears of a clown, that comedy and how a person feels inside is not always the same thing. And I would think, based on what I'm hearing people talking about, and you can corroborate this with your ear to the ground, so to speak, in terms of talk radio, that the underlying current of conversation has to do with people rising to a higher awareness of the presence of depression in our society and just how serious an issue depression is.
Yeah, there's no question about it. I know that, you know, and mental illness in general is one of those things that is, you know, it's not talked about, not easily diagnosed, often misdiagnosed, and treated strangely by the public as well. So it's a, I guess it's a very difficult thing, but you're right, becoming much more, we're more aware of it now than we used to be, and you know, I guess people will say that maybe this will shine a light on it in some way, shape, or form for those who suffer with it, and I guess that remains to be seen.
Well, hopefully, raising consciousness shines a light and helps, you know, awareness is the beginning, raising awareness. But, you know, there have been a lot of psychologists on the radio, psychiatrists on the radio talking about this, and basically the misunderstanding about depression is that the term is often used as a synonym for sadness. You know, I'm so depressed. I'm in a deep depression because my girlfriend didn't call.
Right.
Or you know, I'm worried about losing my job. Or you know, sadness and worry are not depression. Depression is a clinical state, usually caused, as you used the word, mental illness, which is apt, but it's usually caused by a chemical imbalance that is very hard to cure. You can do it temporarily with one medicine, then it doesn't work, and you have to mix them again. And from what I understand, it's extremely painful. We only have about 45 seconds. Final word.
Yeah, it really is, and there are people in our listening audience who either are familiar or who have it in their family and are well aware of what we're talking about, and for them they understand. For those who don't, it's a tough nut to crack to get people to understand, and for the medical community to begin to figure out how to treat this better, a huge challenge lays ahead.
Thank you very much. Kevin Casey is the executive editor, vice president, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Talkers is the trade publication and talk radio. Online, you can visit it at talkers.com. I'm Michael Harrison. A Touch of Gray will continue with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in just a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said you are the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member, So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined the rest of the way by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, in conversation now with Chris Montan. He's the president of Walt Disney Music and a Grammy and Peabody winner. He's going to talk to Steve about the release of the Legacy Collection, The Lion King, on Walt Disney Records. This release coincides with the film and soundtrack's 20th anniversary.
To me, I'm shocked at The Lion King. Not so much The Lion King, because everybody loves The Lion King, but it's been 20 years, Chris, since The Lion King came out?
Yeah, I was actually about 7 when I worked on it, and... It's kind of shocking. It's shocking to me too. But what's so interesting is I've been doing interviews for 20 years about it, because it's the kind of property that is so it just doesn't go away.
It really is an incredible piece of work that is done so well in multiple mediums, both on the stage where it continues to be on Broadway, and the movie. Speaking of the stage and the movie, are there songs on this CD that didn't make it in the movie that may be from the play?
Well, a lot of the, I think you're probably familiar, we did a follow-up to the Lion King soundtrack back in the day, probably within about 8 months, called Rhythm of the Pride Lands. And a lot of the basis for those songs that were written largely by Hans Zimmer and Le Boheme were based on Hans's themes from the movie. And then ultimately, Julie Taymor, when she came in a few years later to do the stage show, she loved all the Rhythm of the Pride Lands music as well, because it was so African, and she really felt that she wanted to use music as a placemaker. So a number of score themes that were in the film are actually in the stage show. Nala has a big song, Simba has a big song. Just about everything was used in one capacity or another.
That's terrific. How many discs are there?
There are two discs. And what's exciting for me personally is this is the first time that all the music from the film has been released on one product. So when you listen to it, it's all in order. The songs are in order of when they came, all the score cues. And I was listening to it last night, and I was thinking, it's almost like you can close your eyes and see the stage show, because all Hans's music is so storytelling. It, you know, sometimes underscores in films are secondary to what's going on. But Hans's melodies are equally important as Elton's melodies were as songs.
It's good. Terrific. And this does actually contain the full score of the movie, doesn't it?
Yes. It has the full score of the movie. Then it also has some demos of the score. Back in the day when we used to do mock-ups like that, it has all Elton's performances, and it even has a couple songs that were cut from one thing. Warthog Rhapsody was replaced by Hakuna Matata, but then at a later date we actually animated Warthog Rhapsody, so it's basically anything to do with Lion King. It's Lion King 24/7.
You know, and as much as there's so much great material in there, and I was looking at all of the pieces there, I got to admit, I go back to Hakuna Matata, and that was the first time, it was 20 years ago, that I had ever heard Nathan Lane. And Nathan Lane was a big Broadway star at the time, but really his voice hadn't appeared in movies much. And that piece doesn't age at all. Is that still maybe the most popular?
Well, I think when I've worked on all the animated films since Little Mermaid and all the Pixar movies, so I'm always kind of keeping track of where we are when I go online and that sort of thing. And generally, One of the two or three most popular songs all the time for Disney is Circle of Life.
Yeah, that is, so and that is wonderful.
Generally, it's like Whole New World from Aladdin is number one, and Circle of Life is generally number two on just about any website you look at. But it was funny, I have a beach house up in Oxnard, and I, about a year after the film came out, I saw two sailboats with Hakuna Matata as their name. That's when I knew we had penetrated popular culture.
I guess that's great. Now, yeah. The CDs also come with a booklet. What's in the booklet?
Well, the booklet has all the lyric, and it has some really, really great notes, particularly a forward. Our producer, Don Hahn, in a couple pages, really captures how the movie came about. What people don't know is when we first started it, it was called King of the Jungle, and the movie was a little bit lighter. It was a little bit more emphasis on kind of comedy and jokes. There was no Circle of Life in the front. And gradually over time, once we had done that opening, a lot of the animators who were already wanting to work on Pocahontas, which already had Colors of the Wind and everybody thought that was going to be the big hit, they all migrated to Lion King. Once they heard Circle of Life, they saw the potential what Africa could be. So I think reading Don's foreword is a nice little two-page summary of how the whole thing came together.
Yeah, it really is an amazing piece. And the thing is, the movie and the music is so rich, and when you get to isolate the music by listening to it on CDs, I think it even has more power. I particularly love to be able to get that kind of information that's in the booklet about it. Is there artwork and information about the characters as well?
Oh, absolutely. Every page has got different shots. A lot of times there are early kind of cells and illustrations. You know, all the artists went to Africa and studied pretty extensively. So the desire to capture, you know, the wildlife was, I think, really particularly successful, and that's all throughout the booklet.
You know, it is such a timeless story and so, so well done. But is it surprising to you that after 20 years, the interest is still just as high as it is now?
You know, that's a really, really good question. There's something, I think, that's primal in the father-son story and Simba, you know, leaving his homeland and then being reunited with his mother and his people. That seems to resonate. And then I think the combination of that, the fact that the stage show is equally an artistic triumph as the movie was.
Yeah.
I think those two are a 1-2 punch. So for a lot of, you know, kids who are 15 or 20 now, their first show may have been Lion King. You know, the tour has gone everywhere. So whereas, you know, animated movies stay in your house and maybe they're on CD and maybe occasionally the kids will play them, there's something about the fact that Julie then gave them another version of The Lion King with all the same music, but now a new, you know, really exciting visual component with the animals coming down the aisles. And I think that's probably part of it. It's that 1-2 punch.
Yeah. I think, you know, certainly these legacy collections, it's not just listening to the movie. I mean, it is so enhanced with so much material and so much new information about it, as well as the merging of both the stage show and the movie as well. So where do we get it?
I think probably everywhere. I mean, I'm sure we'll have a big digital presence and stuff, but I'm sure there'll also be a big in-store. I mean, I really like the package, so I would, you know, but of course I'm very prejudiced, and I want the booklet. I want all that information, because one of the things I find is people don't really know where this stuff comes from. You know, they don't know how a song gets written or how a score gets done, and I think anytime you can have something like this where they actually explain, I mean, for example, Lebo M, at the time he did that chant, he was Simba. He was an exile from his own country.
Wow.
Because of apartheid. That's a really heavy thing, and it's not an accident that a lot of his vocals and the things that he wrote were so much more emotional because Simba's story was sort of his story.
That's Chris Montan in conversation with Steve Wiseman. Chris Montan's the president of Walt Disney Music. He's won Grammys and Peabody Awards. And, of course, he was talking about the release of the Legacy Collection, The Lion King, on Walt Disney Records. Steve joins us for the final segment of this hour. Coming up next, he talks about things to consider when choosing a trustee. That's next on A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues.
You're age 65, and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare-only.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
She's conquered some of the most challenging ski courses anywhere, but with only one leg, the odds were against her even walking.
The growth was stunted in my right leg when I was born, and the doctors told my mother we needed to amputate when I was 5 years old.
Bonnie was helped at a Shriners Hospital, one of a network of 22 hospitals helping kids throughout North America. Shriners Hospitals provide world-class orthopedic and burn medical care, and they offer that care totally free of charge.
The care and treatment the Shriners gave me was a gift. It wasn't just about learning to walk. They helped me to believe in myself.
There's a Shriners Hospital helping kids from this area realize their dreams.
If I went back to the Shriners Hospital and talked to the nurses and doctors, I would say thank you. Thank you for making my dreams come true.
If you know a child they could help, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, giving help and hope to kids for over 80 years.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor seat, and we come to the final segment of this hour of our broadcast. And again, we're joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. He's an attorney. He's a prolific author. He's written so many books about so many of the problems we face in our lives. He's an expert on scams. He's an expert on trusts. He's an expert on annuities. His website is scamaside.com. He has a new book out that's just absolutely informative to the point that everybody should have it. It's called Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. And he's here now to discuss things to consider when choosing a trustee. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, a major part of estate planning for a lot of us is picking a trust, choosing a trust. And when you do choose to use a trust, and there are many purposes for having trusts, including reducing taxes, you need to name a trustee. And that often is the toughest decision that people will make. And there are a number of things that you need to consider when you're making that decision. A lot of people will choose family members, and they prefer to do that rather than an institution. And that's understandable, because institutions will often charge you a lot of money. Generally, there'll even be management fees of between 1% and 1.5% of all assets under management. This can really add up. The other thing is, these professional trustees and institutions, they don't really know your family. So people will often try and pick a family member. But if you do, you want to make sure they've got the right emotional kind of temperament to deal with this. You don't want someone who's confrontational. Another thing is, what about how many trustees you're going to have? You can have co-trustees, but the more people you have as co-trustees, the more cumbersome it becomes in trying to make decisions, because they all have to essentially sign off unless you provide within the trust for certain things to be done only by one. Rule of thumb? Well, generally, if you're going to have more than three co-trustees, you're looking at a problem. Stability is another thing, because remember, your trust may be going on for many, many years. So if you're picking a trustee, you don't necessarily want to pick someone who's the same age as you. You'd certainly want to have someone younger. You'd also want to have someone with some good old common sense. Now, do they have to know investments? Do they have to know accounting? Do they have to know the law? No, they don't. Actually, more than anything else, like in the Dirty Harry movie, Magnum Force, his great line, his closing line, a man's got to know his limitations. And if you've got someone with common sense who knows what they don't know, they can hire the lawyer, they can hire the accountant, they can hire the insurance person, they can hire the investment person to help. These are the kinds of things that you need in picking a trustee. But if you pick that right person and someone with the personal skills, or get an institution, but bring in as a co-trustee someone, perhaps a family member, who can bring that personal touch. You do this, you're going to be in good shape.
Thank you, Steve. Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Esquire. Steve Wiseman, our senior correspondent and a brilliant author. He's written The Truth About Buying Annuities, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, and now Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall. Visit scamicide.com, his website, and it'll keep you informed as to the latest scams out there that are waiting to be perpetuated, or perpetrated is the word I want, waiting to be perpetrated on the public. Steve Wiseman, thank you. And thank you to Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine for joining us. Thank you, Beverly Santanello, our producer on the front line. And a huge thank you to Carol Marks for all the great work that she does, and for spearheading this program for so many years on stations all across America. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison, inviting you to join us next weekend right here for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.